Blog Talk Radio.
Walking through the valley, but yet not afraid. When you think about it, there's been many valleys going on in this country and this world in the past couple of years. And if you're hanging around, you're listening, hey, you've walked through some valleys yourself. Whether you're afraid or not, you made it through, and that's all that matters. My name is Mark Elliott. By now, you know we get together once a week with a couple other gentlemen to put together a conversation. It's a balanced perspective that we kind of dig into on love, life, and relationships. It's a fair, honest self-evaluation, boldly saying some things that need to be said. You know, one thing I found out about our conversations, some run to it and some run away from it. That's okay. We're going to still continue to do it. Soon I'll be joined by Mr. Demiris and Mr. Charles, the usual gang. I can't call them suspects. They might get a little mad at me, but the usual gang to kind of hang out and bring their perspective. I want to go back to something. Sometimes, you know, when you're coming up, your parents say things to you, and you forget it along the way. They kind of walk away. But at certain times, they kind of bring themselves right back to you. And I remember my mother saying time and time again, you're judged by the company that you keep. And I came across a story recently that this really kind of rides itself home to. In Chicago, the Chicago Police Chief of Internal Affairs, Yolanda Talley, her niece recently was driving her vehicle. She was pulled over by other police. And there's a young cat inside. They're claiming that threw at least $6,000 of heroin out the window. And you can imagine her niece driving her vehicle, what kind of position that puts Yolanda Talley in. Not to mention her niece driving the vehicle, had a suspended driver license, and I think might have been a couple of things going on. So to really kind of get a focus on this, we zoom out to, let me take that word and zoom out, we go out to Chicago to one Mr. DeMaurice and bring him in, because I know, man, you should know all about this. This is kind of like in your backyard. So tell us, man, what's going on?
Man, I probably said it so many times on the show, man. Chicago and the state of Illinois is one of the most corrupt cities and states in the union. And I was surprised that the story even got out, because usually stories like this kind of get hushed maybe for about 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years before it really kind of comes out. And if the person wants to run, then run for office or something like that. But the mentality of Chicago, man, it's really kind of strange here. I've been here ever since 1989, and it seems to revolve around a lot of that corruption and how you can get one up on folks. It's a lot of nepotism. It's a lot of things that get covered up here. And you wonder if that stuff was removed from the city and state, you know, how much better this city and state would be. Because if you check you do some research on Chicago, I think we've had the most governors that serve time in prison. And we have a lot of politicians that get indicted on a lot of different things. And it's so much money here, money that comes through here. It could be one of the greatest cities ever, but we continue to let politics and corruption ruin it for everybody. And this has gone back since probably the start of Chicago. So I was really surprised about the story. I'm really interested to see what the police chief and what the mayor is going to do, because they've been really kind of quiet in the last few months because they've been in hot water for whatever reason. I do think that they were in over their heads with this, but this happens a lot, man. Folks, you know, police officers don't make a lot, so they wet their beak whenever they can, and they do some things that are unethical a lot of times. And like I said, I was really surprised that the story came out and went national like that, because usually that gets covered up. And you don't hear about it until after the fact of what's happening.
What I found to be interesting was that the police chief, or I believe the police chief, decided to pull the officers off the street in desk duty until they can investigate what happened here. And I'm saying to myself, wait a minute. They probably prop brothers all the time, and they don't get pulled off the street when they do that. But they do illegal arrests, and it's got to be a big investigation. I found that to be very interesting. We're going to move into a segment that we do from time to time on Black Men Talk. It's called Up From the Ashes. And if you haven't caught this before, let me kind of give you a little background. It's something we do where we bring someone in, and they kind of tell their life story. And throughout their life story, we can see points of their life where God basically picked them up from one point and moved them to another point, and may have picked them up and moved them without that person being aware of it. So when I say up from the ashes, we all kind of come up and do different things from ashes, but I kind of like to bring people in and have a colorful story and not afraid to tell it, not afraid to open up and share. And speaking of that particular person, we have Elder Dr. Devon Archie with us this evening. I want to welcome that brother to the show. How are you feeling, sir?
Hey, good afternoon. I'm good. How you all doing this afternoon?
We're doing well. Mr. Dean Reese, Mr. Charles, welcome yourself to greet Mr. Archie, if you don't mind.
Welcome, sir. Welcome. Glad to have you.
Good. Thank you for having me.
As I was saying earlier, we have someone that comes on basically, and we tend to start right back at childhood because our foundation is kind of cemented, really planted there, and what roots that we kind of inspire and grow tend to come from there. So if you don't mind, sir, we'll bring you back there, and you this is all you. You know, we opened up the doors and gave it to you. We allow you to basically share with us your story up from the ashes, please.
All right, I'll start back at the childhood. I come from a family where I have three other siblings. They all have the same father. I have a different father. I'm the second born, but the whole mixture is just crazy. As I got with my mother later on, I was like, how in the world did that happen? But, yeah, so growing up, I never knew my biological father. I knew of their father, and it was kind of hard, you know, trying to find that identity because you're in a home and you're not with your father. And though you hear many people talk about, yeah, your dad was over here, you know, your dad was here, he gave us $5. And I'm like, well, the brother never stopped by my house, you know, where's my $5, you know? So I kind of grew up having a viewpoint on life as like, I'm already born into a place where it feels strange. I got along with my stepdad. I got along with him and everything, but there's nothing like having a relationship with your own father. So that thing kind of played a part. And then growing up in a home where there was a party every weekend, you know, there was all kinds of stuff happening going on in the house. There was a lot of violence, and the family was really being broken apart. It was tough because, again, you were hoping that at least your father would come and rescue you from all of this, but it never happened. So growing up, I would see my mother with a black eye. I would see, you know, their father with a black eye. I would see they would crash each other's cars up, and it was just a complete mess. So as I got older and really started getting into relationships, I would always find myself in a relationship with an abusive person. And you know, continuing, I've been hit with probably everything within a home. I've been hit with an iron. I've been hit with a phone. I've been slammed through a glass table. I've been beaten up pretty good growing up, and you know, to where I am now. And so,
I'm going to interrupt you there 1 second, sir, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll pick some points just to kind of drop. Sorry to interrupt, because it's interesting that you say you pick someone that was an abuser, and you've been those things that happened to you, because from a male's perspective, we're always hearing the total opposite. We're hearing where women grow up in situations similar to yours, and they're making the choices of doing such. And when it comes down to abuse, we just automatically you know, mentally make the assumption that it's the other way around. So when I hear you say this, I want to stop it and spend a little time there, because that is not the norm. And even though on this show, I have to credit Mr. DeMaurice, because he has spoken about that a few times, and it seems like even when we talk about it, people, because they're not used to hearing or seeing it, they kind of gloss over it like it's no big deal. So I just want to take a quick second out. I want to go to Mr. Charles real quick. Mr. Charles, when you hear him saying that, how does that resonate with you, sir?
Well, I think it kind of really depends on your experience. For me, it's different. I mean, as you said, to the general person, the average person, they may not understand that. But those that do, I mean, my family was a little different too. Where I don't know if I would, I experienced some of the things that gentleman did, but it was always something going on in parts of my family and things like that. So when you know, you know. You just try to get through as much as you can. But I feel what he's saying more ways than one, because I've been around that type of behavior before. So I feel it more than maybe the average person would.
Mr. DeMaurice is coming to you because you have been the strong person that said this many times. We talked about this on the show where we don't really honor it, where the man is in a situation where the abuse is coming towards him. Your response, sir?
I totally agree. And one of the things that happens, I think, is that we attract things that we're familiar with. So, you know, if it seems familiar to us, sometimes we don't catch the patterns that this may be a cycle that we're in. We get attracted to it, and then when we're in it, we're going, wait a minute, you know, I don't want to be in this. And we realize at that particular time that we attracted what we were familiar with and what we experienced. I said several times, I think, on the show that, you know, I had to pick up the pattern where I had to realize that the women I was choosing my mother. And not to say my mother was a bad person, she was a lovely person, but I was choosing women like that because they always seemed familiar to me. So if we're not careful, we'll step into different patterns that kind of replay what we've gone through in our experience in our lives.
Absolutely. We may talk about that a little bit later, too, about choosing our moms as a woman that we, you know, we bring close to our hearts. Elder Dr. Devin Archie, sorry to interrupt, man, but we want to kind of, just sometimes when we find these points, we want to kind of explore them just a little bit. And I want to thank you, I want you to continue, but before you do, I want to thank you again for coming on and opening up, because that's not easy. As I said earlier, some people run to these conversations, and a lot of people run the other direction. So when you have the strength to stand up and have the conversation, we applaud that, my brother. Please continue on.
All right, amen. So, you know, dealing with all those relationships and stuff, I started getting in trouble. I got in trouble my first time getting in trouble with the law. I was 16 years old, hanging with some cousins, and, you know, we got in a car that wasn't ours. I was the driver, so I was the only one who actually was charged. I had to go to court for it, and my mother was with me when we went to court. And as the judge, you know, judge asked you, have a job and all that. My mom looked at me, and she was like, you got yourself in this, you get yourself out. So, you know, I had to pay the fine and all that other stuff and had my license suspended and learned my lessons from that. But back to all the violence and everything, hanging out in the streets, you know, hanging with the drug dealers and doing whatever I could do to get out of the home, you know. So hanging out outside with friends so that I don't have to see what's happening. And then as we get into high school, because I always tell people I like high school so much that I did the extended tour. I spent 5 years there. But I was doing that because the first 2 years, because I wasn't getting any sleep at home, I would sleep in school. And I overheard the chemistry teacher one year. The chemistry teacher said, yeah, I can see that guy right there, the one that sleep. I can see him hanging on the corner being a drug dealer. And he didn't know that I heard him, but I heard him. And, you know, in my mind, I was like, wow, that's all he thinks of me? You know, so I continued to act that out. You know, be the cool guy, go to sleep in class and not do anything. And it ended up backfiring because I ended up failing. And I ended up failing the next year for the same thing. But then I met a gentleman by the name of Wardberg Bryant, Chief Master Sergeant, one Chief Master Sergeant in the Air Force. And he was a brother, and he looked at me as I entered the class, and he said, let me tell you something. You're a young black man. You already have one strike against you. Don't continue to allow for them to put more strikes against you by you giving them the ammunition to do it. So he took me under his wing, showed me the right things to do, was a positive mentor towards me, and it completely turned my life around. Now I'm on track. I joined the military after that, going to the Army, thinking I'm doing something good. I marry a girl that I met in high school. But now we're back to the same thing. We're back to, you know, violence, and the violence increasing. Well, over the years, these things played a part and continue to, you know, really take control of my life and really take control of my mind. And there was a lot of infidelity going on. So then I just stopped caring about anything. So at a point I was thriving in life and thriving in the military, you know, getting promoted above peers and all that. But now I'm at a point where none of that matters because I acted out in anger and let all that stuff get to me. And I ended up getting in trouble. And as I got in trouble, now I'm facing a court martial. And as I'm facing a court martial, I'm sitting here like, man, this cannot be. I didn't join this man's military to be in this man's prison. There's one place I never wanted to end up in was in prison. And before all that, when I was first charged and all that, I knew in my mind I was going to prison because I was a black man who was involved with a white girl. And sometimes here in the United States, and especially some of the people that are in charge, I already knew how they looked at that. So it was easy for them to charge me with all this. And even one of my leaders asked them, why are we sending this man to a court martial? And their words were, because we can. So in my mind, I'm thinking, so because you can, you are willing to ruin my life, even though you knew that I was going through all these issues and I was going through all this strife within my marriage and there was no help you would give for me. But because I dated this white girl, even though it was wrong, you know, adulterous relationship, you still choose to charge me with this. And they did. And I ended up spending 5 months in prison for having an adulterous affair. So now I'm in prison. Well, even before I was in prison, I was about to take my life. And I was standing in my apartment building in the kitchen. And I remember this day like it was yesterday. My wife, who was now my ex-wife, she left because we were living in Missouri. She left, came back to Delaware where we live now. She left with my son and my oldest stepson. I still call him my son. They all left. Now I'm here like, I can't do this anymore. I don't know where else to turn. You know, now they're taking the military from me. This was all I wanted. This is my dream to serve, and now the family that I wanted is gone. Standing in the middle of my kitchen, and I have this weapon in my hand, and I'm getting ready to off my life because I can't deal with it anymore. And it was at this point, this is the first time I ever really heard God's voice. And he told me, don't do it. That was the first time I heard that. And I didn't. Thank God I didn't, because then I started seeking help. I went through this anger management group where I started hearing stories from other men that was similar to mine, but they was also dealing with a lot as well, and it got heavy for them. But as I went to prison, I really devoted my life to God at that point. That first night in prison, when they closed that door, and it was nighttime when I got there because they transported me from Missouri to Arkansas. And as I entered that prison cell, it was all dark. That's when I decided to ask God, okay, God, you got me in this place. What is my purpose? Why do you have me here? I've been through my whole life going through obstacles, been through this whole life trying to prove that I'm a good person, been through this whole life trying to just be happy, and I'm ending up in the place where I never wanted to be. And God simply told me that he had to get me to a place where it was just me and him so that he may speak to me. Because my self-esteem was low, down in the pits. My anger was at an all-time high because of the whole situation. And I really didn't view myself as even being a human at this point. So I'm in this place, and God continued to work on me. And he continues to work on me. And I'm like, okay, I get it. I get the point now. I get the point. And as I get out of prison, now they tell me, you know, you're no longer in the Army anymore. You have to go back home. So I come back home. And the first thing I want to do is try to work it out with my ex-wife because, you know, I want to be close to my son. That's the only reason why I came back to Delaware. I want to be close to my son. And every time that something came up, she tried to hold against me what happened, but never take a responsibility for her part. But that's another story. So I ended up leaving for good because I'm not going to put myself back in the situation. Now I have a little more strength in me that I can be strong enough to walk away from this and stand on my own. And from that day forth, I haven't been back. In fact, me and her have reconciled and become like best friends because we were best friends before we got married. But just to be able to work it out because my son is actually looking at how we interact with each other. And I don't want him to have to go through the same thing of his father not being there like my father wasn't. And I tried to have a relationship with my father many years before all of that. And I used to write him letters because before I joined the Army, we kind of had a relationship going for like 2 years. And so I was writing him and I was, you know, expressing, you know, frustrations and everything towards him. But he would never write back. I was overseas at the time and I was like, come on, man. I'm taking out my time to write you these letters. You can't even write me one letter back. So when I spoke to him about it, the only thing he says is, don't worry about me, son. I'm good. You know, I'm gonna just be who I am. And I was like, wow, that's how you look at it. Okay. So when I was in this marriage, I wasn't coming forth from the experience of seeing a positive marriage or even the positive interaction between a man and a woman. So dealing with all that is just the past marriage was like, it was tough because I didn't know, you know, which way to go. So we both were trying to learn at the same time, what is a marriage? How is a husband and wife supposed to be? How is a father supposed to be? And because we didn't know when we were young, it destroyed everything. So now when I got back to Delaware and I left that marriage alone and had to go through the whole period of, you know, filing for child support and going through all that and being angry with each other, I was in school for studying criminal justice. And as I studied criminal justice, one day the Lord said, you know what? You're not going to do anything in this field. I don't have you doing anything in this field. And I immediately left that school and started studying the Word of God, going to ministry school. And I stayed in there to earn my doctorate degree, and that's where I am now. Now I'm married. I have 4 children with this wife. We've been married for 12 years now. It's a blessed marriage. We continue to move forward, and especially work for, you know, a corporation where I started at the bottom. Now I'm up in management. I continue to move forward. I'm preaching, teaching at a seminary school, and just taking the person who I used to be, the person who was not sure of himself, the person who self-esteem was very low, the person who did not know who they were, did not have that identity, who was just stuck being who he was. And to move to where I am now, it could only have been done by the power of God. If I did not have God in my life, who knows where I would be right now. I could still be doing what I was doing that got me locked up or anything else, you know. But God came in, God changed my life, and now that's who I live for.
Up on the ashes, that's what we say here. Up from the ashes. I want to ask you, though, go back to your father, if you don't mind, And just want to get your opinion of him now. And even when he said to you, don't worry about me, I'm good, I'm sure you had to feel a certain way when he came back and said that. But how did you interpret that? And looking back now, years later, what are your thoughts concerning that?
You know, I had a conversation with him not too long ago, probably about a year now, because I don't know his side of the family. And so I was asking him about my grandmother, you know, my grandfather. And when I mentioned his dad, I asked him about his dad. He immediately, his whole demeanor changed. And he said, he's dead to me. And I was like, well, what do you mean? And he said, he's no good. You know, I have nothing to do with him. So because I understand now that I'm older and a little wiser, I understand that he didn't know how to be a father because he never had the example of a father. So when he told me that, you know, dad is all right, dad is, you know, dad's going to be dad, he was coming from a place of his own hurt. And because he was hurting, that's all he knew how to do. I understand he was a, you know, an alcoholic, a big alcoholic. You know, he was into, you know, some drugs or whatever. But because of what he experienced, he didn't know how to be a father. And as I spoke with my brothers and sisters from on his side, you know, they see that too, that, you know, he didn't know how to be a father. They never met the grandfather. And it took for me to actually talk to them to tell him he doesn't know how to be a father. That's why he does what he does. And so from him telling me that, initially I was hurt. Initially I was like, man, this joker's no good, man. I can't believe this. You know, I'm trying to build a relationship with him. And he just excused me out the way just like that. So I didn't talk to him for a while after that. But, you know, we got to learn to forgive. So I sat down and had that conversation with him.
Beautiful stuff. Beautiful stuff, man, because it's interesting to me. It seems like the people that you love the most can hurt you the most. Mr. DeMaurice, do you have a question, sir?
One of the things that I, when you were saying that, that your father said, hey, you know, I'm good. I kind of thought that, you know, at the time you don't understand, you know, what that means. But as soon as you said that, I kind of whispered to myself, he didn't know how to do it. And a lot of us never got a playbook on how to do it and no examples on how to do it. What were some of the things that or some of the mentors and some of the people that you hung around that helped you kind of get a better understanding of how to be a black man, how to be a husband, and how to be a father?
One person, I can give credit to one person, and that's Chief Master Sergeant Wahlberg Bryant. He is still my mentor to this day. He turns 80 in October, and I just spoke with him last week. And he would invite me and my family down to his home to have Thanksgiving with his family. When I came back to Delaware, I would volunteer at the school. I volunteered for 6 years there. He was still working there. And he brought me on board. And every evening before leaving that building to travel home, because his commute was like an hour, he would call his wife. And I used to be like, why you call your wife every day? You know, because you're going to see her soon. And he says, I may not make it home. So I want her to know that I love her. And I was like, wow, that's powerful. So I started, you know, throughout the day, I started, you know, texting my wife, calling my wife, because now he's showing me the example of, man, this is a man who's been married over 50 years and it's been successful and they still together. What is the secret? And just him just speaking to me, be like, Arch, that's what you got to do, man. Arch, just make sure you spend time with your family because you don't want to come home and have the dog look at you like you're a stranger, you know, because you're always out. And that was my one mentor that showed me, one, how to be a black man here in America, two, how to be a father, and three, how to be a husband.
Mr. Charles, I want to get you in, sir, if we have a question.
Yeah, my question is, you mentioned some of the struggles you went through early on, and you were at a point in your life where, you know, it was a wrap for you. You didn't know what how you could move on. But as you progressed, getting to know the Lord, what was that like, that transformation? Because for a lot of people, they talk about, they understand about how they met, the Lord led them. But for yourself personally, what was that transformation like? I mean, what was that feeling like? And once you like, man, yeah, this is really something that saved my life and God is in my corner. If you could expand on that for me, please.
Yeah. When I got to that real low point, at the point where I was about to, you know, not exist anymore, I really started focusing on and really praying to him. Because I realized that there was no one else that I could talk to at that moment that could help pick me up from where I was. And I know that I was headed to prison at this point. I kind of, you know, I had a feeling because of, you know, who was in charge and I've seen how they feel about things that's the route that they were going to take. So it was like, okay. So I started going to this church in Missouri. And in this church, they really began to really show love. And as they showed love, I was like, wow, this is real? I mean, this can't be real. And one way that they showed love, and I can never forget this, they put me on the program one Sunday, and I didn't know that anybody knew my name. But the pastor came up to me. He was like, yeah, I have you on the program for reading the scripture. And I was like, who, me? And he was like, your name's Devin, right? I was like, yeah. So, yeah. So I was like, wow, somebody actually knows that I exist. This is awesome. And so I began to really stay with them. I would, you know, as long as I was in Missouri, that's where I would go. And I would feel that love. And then when I got to prison, that's all I did. All I did was read the Bible, really lean on the Lord to get me through. Again, this was a place I never wanted to be ever in my life. So I got closer to the Lord, and as I got closer to him, he started revealing more things to me about my life and how my life should be. And that walk with him, you know, being able to walk with him and really talk with him and to rely on him and have the things that he showed me actually come to full manifestation was like powerful. And to actually, and to view him as a father, that was tough in the beginning, especially when you don't know what a father is and you don't know what a father's supposed to be. I mean, my stepdad, he did the best he could, but once, you know, him and my mom split, they broke up. I started rejecting him too, because now I'm like, nah, he left too. You know, I never knew my dad at this point. He's gone. But now you leave too. Ah, man, no father's good. There's just no such thing as a father. So being, you know, closer to God was like, wow, this is actually what a father's supposed to be. He make a promise and he actually carries out that promise. That was amazing. So the more he started carrying out those promises, the closer I got to him and the more I, you know, started relying on him even more. And there's been some battles. There's been some times where, you know, I might have gotten down or, you know, depression might try to, you know, creep in on me or whatever, but I could always go to him. And that's what's powerful about it. You could always go to him and he'll talk to you, you know, and tell you, you know, calm you down and everything else. And I just think it's awesome. The relationship, the whole transition was just awesome. From going from not knowing God to actually giving him your all and allowing for him to be your father, it was an adjustment, but it was an adjustment that was necessary. Hope
beautiful
I answered
stuff.
The question.
Yeah, beautiful stuff, man. Yes, you did very well. I want to spend a little time now because you said you're in management, working at a good place. But for some reason, I feel you're more to that. I'm sure you're doing some other things and you have some things might be coming down the pipe or whatever. And that's just the feeling I have, bro. So if I'm correct, please fill us in.
Yeah, I'm the host of a show called Sunday Supper. You can view it on Facebook Live, Sunday evening, 7 p.m. You know, look it up on, you know, like us on Facebook called Sunday Supper. That's a ministry in which I do a teaching. I do different teachings on the Bible, different teachings surrounding, you know, faith as it is, as a whole. It's just an awesome show. I also am an elder, ordained elder, so I do preach at a ministry called Transformation Ministries, which is awesome also. It was a ministry that helped me grow to who I am today. Definitely a blessed and, you know, spirit-moving church. I also do things within the community. I host a bike ride every summer called I Want to Live. Bike ride for the youth. And what I do with that is I take the youth from the city, because I'm located here in Wilmington, Delaware. I take our youth and I take them to a part of Wilmington where many of them never been or never seen. And from there, we'll take this bike ride. And throughout the bike ride, I'll give them little nuggets of positivity so that though they came, they might have been, you know, holding on to something that happened at home, or they might have seen somebody get shot outside their door the night before. But now I'm taking their mind and I'm transforming it, allowing it to see the good in life. So I give them words of positivity. I take them a distance in which they have never rode before in their life. They get to see different things. And then I bring them back, and then I feed them. You know, my wife and I, we go around and, you know, we spread out goodies throughout the community, you know, like twice a year. But this is one of those things where I feed them, and while I'm feeding them, I'm asking them what they're going to do, what are their goals for their life. Because no child grows up saying, I want to be a drug dealer, or I want to be this, or I want to be that. They always have a goal or something that's positive. It's the experiences that they have throughout life that changes it in the trauma. So just for this hour or two, it's an opportunity for me to really just show them that there's more to life than what you see outside your door. So doing that. And then just other, you know, community things around here. I'm a big activist. One of the things I was doing was after the last election with our, especially with our city council and our mayor, before the election, I told the mayor that I will hold him accountable for every promise that he made for our city. And I have done that. I have stayed in his inbox. I have stayed in his aide's ear. I get with city council to try to better our neighborhoods, because we have seen nothing but neglect in the black community and, you know, people of color altogether. So I'll hold them accountable for, you know, what their promises were during their campaigns. It's about a year now. I've taken a pilgrimage and was able to actually speak with people of other faiths, because I love to have discussions with people from different faiths, just to get their perspectives on things. I took a pilgrimage. We had a walk. We had a talk. So that connection is there. To bring resources, especially for some of the things that I do here in the community. So those are the things that I have going on.
Mr. DeMaurice, your last words for for our elder Dr. Deacon Devin, aren't you, sir?
Brother, I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing that story. We all need to share our stories to sharpen each other as men. As it say it in the Bible, iron sharpens iron. And I think these stories really kind of they're the fuel for us to continue on and realize that no matter where we are in our lives, that we can come out of whatever situation that we're in to make our lives more serviceable and live up to our potential as men. So thank you.
Amen.
Mr. Charles, your last word, sir.
Yes, I just wanted to also piggyback what DeMaurice said. Appreciate you, brother, for coming on today. And most importantly, and that's the reason why I asked about the question about faith in the Lord, because we have so many of our young people that feel like they have nowhere to turn. and they have some very difficult situations. And some of those they don't even talk about in public because they don't want to be shamed or whatever. But when you get deep down in the dumps and you feel like you have nowhere to turn, the fact that you shared the way that you did and you were able to come up and you remain an example of how you were able to make it through and how God has blessed you says volumes. And I hope you continue to be blessed to do so, because so many of our young people need that. And they don't know, like you said, don't have any answers. But to hear stories like this and continue to see success like yours goes a long way and helps them, give them hope for the future. So thank you.
Amen. Amen.
I'm going to say this, man, at some point, I'm not even sure how, but we're going to get you back on there, bro. We're going to come back because your energy is just as out there, and we love that. And I can't really add much to what they already said, so I'm not even going to try. But I want to have you back. You know, I'm going to stay in contact with you, and I appreciate you coming aboard, man. I appreciate you coming and sharing your story. And, again, it's not easy, but sometimes we don't understand or what we say our lives and stuff we've been through. Sometimes we think we're the only ones that experience certain things, and you realize after you start to talk and share, there's so many others. So they might be a little different. And one story, one person telling a story can help so many others. So in that vein right there, we appreciate you, man, coming on and sharing.
Amen. Thank you for having me. I'm always willing to share. And if you want me back on, just, you know, we'll connect.
Will do, man. Have yourself a good evening. I appreciate it.
No problem. You all be blessed, all right?
Take care now.
All right.
Gentlemen, I want to do something, you know, we drop the music from time to time on the show, but I wanted to do something a little different. It's a song, to me, it's a beautiful love song. After you listen to it, you might say, Mark, what are you talking about? But to me, it's a beautiful love song. And what I want to do is play a good portion of this. And then after it's played, we kind of give our version, our perspective. So if you don't mind, listen closely, and we'll dissect it in a little bit.
Love was taken down. Arms
come to you first, knowing that you're a writer. And you know, to me, when writers, they have a mind that kind of sees things a little different than the average folk, in a sense. You kind of see maybe in color, you see it in different ways. But when you hear the lyrics, and to me, again, I think this is a beautiful love song, beautiful love song. And I think sometimes we get confused and thinking a love song has to be to him or her, or about basically trying to get you to do something, you know, for us of gratitude, or I'm sorry, gratification, that gratification of feeling a certain way. And to me, that's a version of a love song. We made that for our own personal reasons. But to me, this is one of the best love songs I ever heard. But I want to get your opinion of the lyrics and how they respond and how they resonate with you.
Yeah, basically, for me, this is a love song to the Creator, and it's an offering to the Creator because, you know, if you notice in the lyrics, it's like, you know, I can never repay all the things you did for me, but this is what I can do. This is what you blessed me with to sing your praise and to give you homage and give you praise on you know, keeping me out of harm's way, because I think all of us get to a point where you've been in situations, or you've avoided situations, or you made a left when you could have made a right. And if you look back in hindsight, if you made that right, you wouldn't be here right now. So, and you know that wasn't you that was doing that. There was someone else doing that, and that was that love from the Creator that loves you so much that's going to, whether or not you get in that situation, they're going to protect you at all costs, because that's how much love they have for you. So how can you express that love to an entity that has given you more than you can return? So that's what the song is today.
It's good stuff right there. Sir, Mr. Charles, when you let the lyrics kind of penetrate, you feel, or you kind of pull what from it, sir?
To me, it's about unconditional love. And, you know, a lot of times as human beings, we get in our own way, or we're in positions that the brother mentioned when he was on earlier, talked about he just kind of felt like he had no answers. And he didn't know what was going to go on with his life. In fact, he didn't know if he was going to be here. But the fact of that, you know, the Creator or the Lord, you know, can grasp you and meet you right where you live, man. And for so many of us, it's difficult. Some of us have had a little bit more challenges than others, but the challenges, regardless, are the same. It's all our stories are unique. But to meet you the way that you're being met by, you know, by the Creator or the Lord, says volumes. There's no judging. And no matter what you do or what you say, the Creator is there. And you know, even when you mess up, when you think you've messed up the worst to the point where people have been to prison, committed murder, done some things or whatever, you know, the Lord still takes them, man. He takes them. He tries to rejuvenate them, put them in a better position. But if they're willing to receive him for who he is and accept his love, there's nothing he wouldn't do. And oftentimes that's all the people have, because nobody else is willing to understand or take a second chance or whatever have you. But, you know, God's love is unconditional. And the thing that you hope for many people is that at some point in their life, they actually feel that or receive that.
It's very interesting, because to me, that's such a love when you're open to it and you experience it and you work with that love and you build a relationship with God, and it manifests itself over and over, and it shows. It's a type of love that leaves you, I'll speak for myself, to where you, it's a separate love among itself, but it does make you look at love in other terms of expectations of a simple love that you may have, or a simpler love that you may have with humans, per se, because he loves you so well. And as you said, Mr. Charles, you can do certain things and it's forgotten about. It's not brought up back to you. It's not brought up next week when you're driving along in the car. You can make a simple mistake that's not hung over your head. It's things that happen. And in spite of all of any things that may take place, he sees you for who you are. He knows your heart, your intent. your desires, your wills. And I'm going to come back to you, Mrs. Jones. And you too, I'm going to thank you too for the response to the song, because really, I mean, this is what we do here. I'm not surprised, because we find ways, man, to basically give our perspectives. And I really believe that people listen to this show, and I'm just going to give my personal beliefs here. I think sometimes they hear our response to certain things and didn't think that black men could respond and think the way we do. Because I said this before, when we're talking, we're not doing a bunch of, you hear what I'm saying, you know, I'm coming from you. We don't do that here. We just don't. And to me, those are additives when you ain't got shit to say. They really are. There's fillers. We don't have fillers. You know, we speak. And I'm not saying a lot of people don't think black men, but on average, it's kind of hard to get us just to have a conversation, take out the fillers, and move to our hearts and move to our words and just speak. And I love the fact that we do this over and over and over again. I've been doing it for years. But the question I'm going to give to you, Mr. Charles, is after the greatest love and experiencing and living with the greatest love of all that can be accepted, how do we adapt to lesser loves of we may experience in a relationship?
I think that it's important to keep things in perspective, right? While you expect, you would love to have someone or someone or other types of love to be just as strong, to be just as unconditional, and be just as true and even loyal. We almost have to keep in perspective that a lot of times this love is coming from human beings. And we as human beings are imperfect. And you have to keep that in mind. And you know, we sin, we do a lot of things, and it's only the Lord that really has that ability to really be unconditional and treat us the way that we do. So we have to keep that in perspective and realize what we're doing, and then have the mindset to, while we're dealing with these loves, to ask God to guide us and strengthen our relationships so we can deal with those. So if somebody's missing an element of education due to ignorance, then because of what we've been through, we can try to work it out because we're focused and the Lord is guiding us. And I think that's so key, based on what you know, that you can help others. But I don't think we ever can expect other human beings to always be on point, because we're not made that way, bro. I started from the beginning. We made mistakes. God still loved us.
Your response, Mr. DeMarie. Awesome answer, Mr. Charles. Awesome answer, brother. Your response, Mr. DeMarie.
Yeah, just like the brother said earlier, that the Creator is our example. And it's how it's supposed to be as far as you and how you treat other people. And so sometimes we go astray from that because I know for me personally, you know, you fall in love, you kind of forget everything else, but you get those subtle reminders by the Creator, like, no, I'm still the primary source of this, so don't forget that. And that when those relationships don't go really well, you still have a relationship that is unfading and everlasting. And so we get our guide and our example from the Creator and how we're supposed to conduct ourselves and how we're supposed to love. And I think that that's the only relationship that matters when it's all said and done. But as long as we're here and we're you know, part of the human race, we need to be that example of the source that lives within us. Because I truly don't believe that there's a mystical, magical person, you know, kind of looking over. I think that energy source is within us. I think God is a frequency. I think God is an energy. And so I kind of look at that he puts that in us, and that we need to be the example of what he is to other people.
Yeah, I could double down on that. That I could double down on. And what is interesting by double down on that is that I think sometimes realize the frustration because we want to be what we feel we should be, And when you're trying to do that and a person is not honoring that what you're offering, what you're delivering, there comes the frustration. Because we might be looking at it from that perspective, and they're looking at it from a perspective, I'm trying to get what I can get. It's a good feeling. I'm trying to have what I can have. And there goes the imbalance. I want to throw a word at you, Mr. Reese, because the song starts out speaking of an undying love. That's a phrase that, I don't know when last time I heard that, bro. I mean, I might have to go back to my early 20s. Last time I heard that phrase, bro. Undying love. The phrase itself, the words itself, when you put it together, it your perception of an undying love.
I remember thinking about this a long time ago, and I think I can't remember one of my son or daughter. They did something, and it really pissed me off. And you know, I was thinking of, you know, the response and all that other stuff and what I should do back and all that other stuff. And I'm like, and the thought came to me. It wasn't words, it was thought. It was a thought that says, well, how do you think I feel sometimes? It was just a clear thought. Like, how do you think I feel sometimes? You mess up. You do things that you know, is sometimes could be considered not lovable, but I love you anyway. And so that tempered all those negative feelings I had. That, I mean, it just, it really kind of just faded away, because I had to think of the Heavenly Father and the Creator, and we're not always great and good children. We don't always do what we're supposed to do, and He loves us anyway. So how can I judge, and how can I have this kind of vengeance in my heart with, you know, these children being under me? I couldn't do it. So it's like, okay, if I'm the example and you're within me, then I got to have that same spirit, same forgiving heart, same undying love to these children. Despite what they do, what they say, and all that other stuff, you got to be the solidifying and the stable force in this. And when you do that, things work out. They come around where the child comes to you and go, you know what, I apologize, I was wrong. Because at some particular point in time, which I was always given to, you're going to need me. I know you're going to need me. So I'm going to be here when you need me. And so that was like when you said that was kind of like my quick example. It wasn't a voice. It was just a thought in my head that said, now, how do you think I feel? When you mess up, when you don't do what is expected, but do I turn my back on you? And I'm like, you know what? I can't turn my back on anybody I say I love and care about, because that ain't the way the Creator approaches what I do. And I've done some messed up things. And so if the Creator is offering that undying love, then I got to do the same, because if I claim that I'm a part of this energy and frequency, then it's in me already to do that. I'm capable of doing that. So I got to step forward and do that. And then what I did was let them know, listen, I know you're angry right now, but, you know, if you need me, I'm here. And I left it like that. And so when they needed me, I was stepping right there.
Yeah. Undying love, man. You definitely hit it. It's a big part of forgiveness. Because if you feel a sense of undying love, you realize people will make mistakes. They will do things to hurt you. You know, some of it's intentional and some of it's unintentional. But the love itself is just undying. You forgive because we live in a world of sin, and we are going to sin, and we are going to do things that's not always going to be pleasing. And as you said, if he's feeling, no, you've done many things against him. And if you look at it through those eyes, it promotes that sense of forgiveness and understanding and compassion. And it all streams from that undying love. Mr. Charles, I'm going to definitely bring it to you, undying love. So when you hear the phrase, like I said, I haven't heard it in a long time. Long time, man. You hear the phrase, what's the perception that kind of comes your way?
Well, DeMaurice mentioned some things, but for me, it's like, you just don't, sometimes you ask why. That was my biggest thing, because I knew I messed up a lot. Had a lot going on growing up, and just some really very tough situations that I didn't know how I was going to survive and get through. I had to do a lot of things on my own. I had received examples, but I still had to make it through. It's like reading a book. You still got to test it out yourself. And you didn't have a lot of room for error. But with that undying love that, you know, the Lord forgives you for things and still guides you through despite you being a knucklehead. And like Demarius mentioned, I know for myself, I've done some stuff. I look back on it now. I was like, man, why? Why does God even care? Because I know what I was like in my late teens and my 20s, man. Even when I went to school, I told DeMaurice, I don't know what the hell I was doing in school when I first got there. It wasn't to study because I didn't think I belonged there, but I had some other agendas. And I'm like, regardless of that fact, you know, God had patience. And that's part of that undying love to let you grow as a person and put people in your life to make you realize that you start out as a project. You started out as a messed up situation. Even sometimes people might call it a piece of junk. But once you kind of like you're molded and placed in the situation, you become a totally different project and situation where you become a fine-tuned type of piece of something made beautiful out of clay. And that's what God does. He molds you by putting people in your life, doing different things. But again, it comes back to that undying love where you go, am I even worthy? But to let you know, you're my child, and yes, you are.
Gentlemen, we're going to take a little short break, and we come back. We'll jump into the questions you may have for us this episode on Black Men Talk. It's Mr. DeMaurice, Mr. Charles. I'm Mark Elliott. Thanks for being on to listen.
Don't know the right words to say. I'm not magic. Don't hold the world in my hands. Wish I could fly through the air like a hero. But I'm just someone who loves you. That's all I am. Wish I could take you away to a palace, make you the queen of the land. All the riches and gold, I don't have them. I'm just someone who loves you. That's all I am.
Mr. Charles, your question you have for us this episode, sir?
Yeah, my question is, because you guys both have been married and you have children, but even besides that, you probably helped mentor some other people, young people. Have you ever come across some young people that have been your company or you've been around or been able to connect with, and they do some things where they're being naughty or they're doing some things where they have bad behavior? And when you witness this, you see yourself and you shake your head and go, they think they're getting away with something. And I guess my question is, have you had that happen to you before? And then if you did you take action to do something about it to correct them?
Yeah. Most definitely, you come across someone that kind of puts you in perspective some things you may have been through or something you may experience. It's not the same, but it's kind of on the line of what you're speaking of. I remember there was a gentleman years ago that he was thinking about getting married, and him and I were sitting at a table at work, and another guy was sitting there, and at this time, I've been divorced for a period of time. And he was saying how when he told everyone at work that he was going to get married, everyone's like, man, this job, you know, wrecks a marriage. You won't be married long, blah, 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 blah. blah. And I said to him, I said, you can't hear none of that. There's no job that wrecks your marriage, bro. You have to understand you're going to be what makes your marriage whole. So don't listen to that. So I said, there's a lot of bitter people out here that may have got divorced if they started here, but it wasn't the reason they got divorced because they're here. And they're not being honest about it. So don't take anybody else's garbage into your marriage or into your mind, your thought process. Make yours your own. So I'm not saying I had those thoughts previous to getting married, but it was a chance to basically say some things to a cat that might have been thinking, you know, having second thoughts based on other things he's hearing and just kind of filling the blanks, man, kind of filling the blanks. Your response, Mr. DeMaris?
Yeah, I was just talking about this to a person at an event I was at Thursday, and it was a young man who was in a few of my classes, and I always paid special attention to him because I always had to treat pretty much as a brother, keep him on task. And there was another guy who the mailroom at our university, who I guess kind of felt the same way, and he would always ask, you know, how is so-and-so doing? I'm like, hey, man, we got to tighten up on him. And we kind of did a tag team on him. He couldn't get away with anything, you know. And so when I was talking to this guy who knew him, he said, yeah, man, he graduated, he went to grad school, and now he's a school counselor. And I'm like, give him my information because I want him to come talk to some of the classes. Because I want to help him pay that back, because we were on him, and I would pull him to the side. I know my boy who worked in the mailroom, he would pull him to the side also. And, you know, we kind of saw ourselves in him, you know. You know, I'm a knucklehead, still a knucklehead, and we kind of saw the same things. And sometimes I would sit back and I would see him do things or him say things in class, and it would be the hardest thing. We didn't have the math back then. It would be the hardest thing not to laugh or not to chuckle, because you remember thinking or saying some of the same things. But it was just great to hear that he's doing so well. And hopefully he sees that in some of the young people he's dealing with and helps them along and learn some of the lessons that we were able to teach them here and pass it and pay it forward. So I thought about that when you asked this question about I don't want to call his name, but hopefully I'll see him soon, because I know when I ask for him and I'm like, hey, tell him to call me, he's going to call pretty soon.
Good question, Mr. Charles. Your response, sir?
Yeah, I used to coach some kids over in this neighborhood, fourth through sixth graders, and some of them came from some very tough situations. And even some of the kids I wasn't coaching, they would just be around playing and messing around and doing some bad things. And a couple kids, one kid in particular, was doing something. He was just acting out. And he did something towards me, and I looked at him, and he looked like I didn't see him. So I put him away from the other kids. And I said, you know, I saw you, right? He said, what you talking about? I said, nah, you know what I'm talking about, right? And then we talked about his behavior. And I said, well, I'm not mad at you. I said, I want to point something out to you. And I said, I know why you're acting out. And we talked about it. And I said, the reason why I'm not going to, you know, respond a certain kind of way or go report you to a teacher or a security, something like that, is because I know why you're doing what you're doing. And I told him why, because I said, I understand you, because I used to be you. And I said, you see me coming in here and coaching and volunteering, you think I'm from a different planet. But in actuality, I'm just like you. The only thing different is our area code, you know, our zip code, just a different place, but it's still the neighborhood. And after we had that conversation, he kind of looked at me, and then he went about his business. But I would see him afterwards, and he was like a model citizen. In fact, he made his business to come over and speak to me to make sure I saw him. And I think that's what we have to do. We have to take more and be more invested in our young people. And sometimes some kids just don't know any better. They don't know anything. And they need to be taught something instead of just turning turning away and neglecting them and not saying it's not my problem, not my child, so I'm not going to do anything.
Remember years ago when it was a big thing about being a role model, and there was a couple of athletes. I'm not nobody's role model, and that's one thing for me about black men. We cannot afford to say, because we're always being looked upon by the younger male generation and female generation, whether you want to believe it or not, and they may not walk up to you and say anything, but they're paying attention to where you go about doing you. And you should always want to show them something that they can gain from and be better. And I agree, you need to go up and, you know, at times have those conversations. But I think in the way you carry yourself, the light that you bring to speak for you, and they are able to see it, because they pick up on it, whether you believe it or not, they pick up on it. And they don't have to look, especially the girls, they don't have to look at you long, but they can read you fast and understand and know quickly. And I think that's a lost thing with us, was that we don't realize that we owe it to them to show them something of good. And we just take it, you know, nah, I'm not. No, you are a role model, whether you want to believe it or not. In our population, you are. It's not in the scope of things, it's not that many of us. There really isn't. So with that being said, you are. No one has to walk up to you and proclaim that you are. You are. So stop acting like an idiot and realize there's somebody younger that's paying attention that can learn and be better from you. Your own question, Mr. DeMaurice.
Yeah, in the today, in harm's way, name somebody or somebodies who kept you out of harm's way and, you know, keeping you out of trouble, things of that sort.
I know about trouble, but said some things that, yeah, man. Well, it could have been trouble, but said some things that just always resonated and always kind of, you know, played a role, if not in everyday life, it seemed like everyday life, man. Grandma, you know, Rosalie, got to go back to her. Really do, because I, the things that she said, the knowledge and stuff that she dropped, you know, the way she used to play with my mind and say things that at the time I couldn't fathom and understand, but to live out and live a life to where those things have paid dividends over and over and over again, it helped to establish me as a man that I am, my thought process, and to have me move along all these years of my life, you know, if that was absent, you know, there would be a huge void in me, huge void. I have to try to make that up somewhere else. And I'm grateful, you know, that in the tree of DNA, of being born, that she's my grandmother. I mean, God could have chosen to come from another grandma, you know, somewhere else, and whatever the case may be, but he saw fit to have me come, not maybe from her womb, but from a womb from her womb, and to have me be able to go back to her and gain from her. And I, man, that's invaluable. That's invaluable. When I think about it, it's beyond amazing, beyond amazing. And for me, I just thought that's just the way where life works. When she was, you know, saying what she was saying, I just felt this is what everybody should have, a privilege to have a grandmother to go back to and be able to give you things that you need that's going to inspire and move you, strengthen you, and allow you to be who you need to be. So, yeah, I mean, if I wanted to take time and find others, but there will be none better. Be none better. Your answer, Mr. Charles?
Definitely. First off, be my dad. My dad was just, that's who he was. It's like he went through hell in a handbasket, and he should have given up a long time ago, according to a lot of people. But he didn't quit. You know, he could have walked away from raising his child and whatnot. And then, two, on my mom's side, it probably would be, I think I mentioned you guys before, it's my great-grandmother and my great-aunts, her daughters. Even though their husbands had passed away or they really didn't have men in their life, they were independent, successful businesswomen that kind of guided that part of the family, that side of the family. And, you know, they dealt with sons and nephews and cousins and people that was getting in trouble with drugs and going to prison and everything. But they set a tone. It's like just because you think you are a tough person or you think you're doing bad, we go by a certain protocol. And if you messed up, you're going to get messed up for too long. So you had to get it together. Or they would, you know, to that point where they let you know how it was. And they didn't have a problem. And even as women, strong arming you. So you knew the price. They even strong armed my dad a couple times. Means you better get your ass together, man, for this boy. So they didn't play. But you knew that you had to come correct because there's no reason why for you to act that way, particularly because of the stock, the family stock, and the legacy that you came from. You didn't have to be that way. There was no reason for that.
Well, Mr. DeMaurice, yeah, man. Hope I didn't take your thunder with that one, but who was it for you, sir?
No, I thought about that. I thought about there are a number of adults that I thought about in my family, but I got to go with you, man, because you really didn't know a lot of stuff that I was into. But time to spend together, you and your brother, trying to DJ. I'd be 6 or 7 hours to go by, and that was 6 and 7 hours of grace because I could have been doing something else, hanging with some sketchy folks. And, you know, whether or not your mother made you take care of me or hang around you guys or whether we were just hanging around having fun, lifting weights, you and your brother saved me from a lot of stuff that could have happened that, you know, I could have turned right, but I went left and, you know, I was taken out of harm's way. So thank you. I love you. You know, you're always going to be my family, brother, cousin, but you're always going to be meathead to me too. So just wanted to give you that shout out.
Thank you, sir. No, to clarify, Mom never said a thing, man. You know, you were family, bro. You were family, man. And it's funny because I look back now, and it's still this way to an extent. I'm more so it than you probably. But we had a competitiveness, man, bro, that was just deep. I was quiet and unspoken, but it was there. And in that sense, I say competitive, but at the same time, it was motivational. And I'll give an example because we'll work out together, bro. And, you know, if I got down and did 100 sit-ups one day, I knew you was coming back the next day doing 110. I already knew. I'm like, okay. So in my mind, if he did 110, I'm doing 120 the next day. And it just kind of went. It went that way too where, no, but I'm thankful that, you know, if, you know, what you said, I was able to, at that young age, be there for you, bro, because I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Mr. Charles is here because we all could have went a lot of different ways and done a lot of different things, man, and not be able to basically come up from the valley and stand tall, bro. But no, I'm thankful that, you know, you and I get a chance to do this and everything else that we do. I have cousins our age that I know I always kind of made a purpose to stay in contact with. And it's interesting, sometimes when I was doing that, it seemed like they weren't really feeling it. Then at some point they picked up and they took the baton. And I'm glad if it just took me kind of doing it for a period of time, I'm thankful because I think as family, that's what we should do. I'm not saying we have to talk every day. We have to see each other. We all got our own lives. But there are times where we should reconnect, man, and always kind of basically pick up where we left off. So you already know the life I love I have for you. And that ain't going nowhere, bro. That ain't going nowhere. So I appreciate it. I'm going to give you guys, if you know, Mama, throw something out that I came across recently. And it kind of just made me think, so I want to kind of bring it here. I came across a story yesterday where Wells Fargo, the past 2 years, there was a big boom in refinancing homes, in a sense. And Wells Fargo Bank basically had the lowest rate of refinancing black homeowners. Most other banks were, let's say, at 78%. Might have been 70, somewhere around there, of their current mortgages they had of door black that they kind of got refinanced. And Wells Fargo basically was down at 45%. And there was one story they gave of a cat that had 800 credit score rating, blah, 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 all the stuff, gave them a run around but not refinance them. They'd have had in the past a couple of lawsuits brought against them that they lost and discriminatory practices. So my question is to you two, when I look at this, why are black people still trying to do business with people that don't want to do business with them or take advantage of them? And I'll come to you first, Mr. Charles, because I don't understand this. Because to me, if I've read this story, and I don't like banks anyway. Let's just say point blank. I think they're useless. You really understand they are absolutely useless. You don't need a damn bank to get a mortgage in this country. They make you believe it. They make you believe a lot of things you need them for and you really don't need them for. But my point in saying that is I don't understand when you see them doing things that's not for you or the people that look like you, why you still continue to do business with them? I'm going to give a quick example before I come to Mr. Charles, because I remember years ago, I was in this credit union with my job. And, well, you know, I'm taking money on my account each week. I was getting paid. I was taking money. So I went to go shopping for a car. And I know I work with this white guy who worked in. This guy would call him up on a Thursday, Friday, need him to lead a loan. Man, he'd go up to the credit union and got a loan. There's no problem. I never asked him for a loan. Never did. So I went out shopping for a used car. I came across this Lexus I wanted to buy. So at the place I purchased the car, the guy said to me, yeah, we can – you know, we can get you financed with XYZ. The person at XYZ was Chase Bank. I said, nah, I got a credit union. I think I'm going to roll through them and get it done. So apply for the application. They denied me. So I called them. This guy going for, yeah, we're not going to be. I said, I'll tell you what. I'll be up tomorrow to take every motherfucking dime I got out of there and shut my account down. He said, well, we just, no. I said, I got Chase Bank, which blows your fucking doors off. You would never hold money at mine if I can't call you and get a loan. I don't even understand the reasons why you're choosing not to. But you open at 8, I'll be there by 9 to take my money out and shut my account down. Have yourself a good day. So that's the question I want to put out here. Why, as people, are we still doing business with people that's basically stabbing us in the freaking back, Mr. Charles?
Well, I think a lot of times people are either they are ignorant to the fact what's going on. They're not aware of the other options that they have. And I think other people or even to the point where they're lazy about it. But if you really understand the history of this country and how things have really gone, then you would take it upon yourself to do the research, understand what your options are, and realize you as a customer and you as a person with money, a certain amount of money or a certain amount of money, have options. And they should treat you a certain way because you're a customer. You know, and there's truth. You're supposed to be a customer. You're supposed to be right. So the example for me is growing up, what I did in Dayton, Ohio, for the longest time in the neighborhood, there was a bank right in the heart of the neighborhood. And they had a lot of business that they did through with African-American community. They were there for years. I'm talking about 30-plus years. And when they changed the brand over at the bank, somebody else took it over, and they just kept it rolling. But we come to find out that at that bank, or after they did research, that the bank was denying a major part of the community, of the black community, from getting any loans. But they literally were taking the people's money that they were receiving and loaning out to people that were not of color. And until they came up with the actual report on it and it was exposed, that's what was happening. And people accepted it because they didn't know anything differently or know any better. But that's how we were taught, because we lived in a segregated community. And a lot of people just didn't want to ruffle feathers. You don't want to mess up because they know they got all this stuff on you. You didn't know any better. But in today's world, that should not be an issue. So I agree with you 100%. You have to do your due diligence. You have to do some research. And if you don't know, ask somebody, do some reading up, or find out what you need to do in order to make the best investment or use your money or move it in the best way possible. And I think that's what has been the issue. But some of us, over time, have continued to stay with that closed mindset of not understanding what's available to us.
Yeah, because let me just say, I've seen, you know, other nationalities. You offend one, you offend them all. It's just the way it is. You can offend us, and we know that wasn't me. Yeah, that wasn't me. And that's, I always find it interesting, Mr. Maurice. Why is it that we still, and Mr. Charles, you make some good points, because at the end of the day, it's lazy, not doing your homework, not caring. Because even the customers, in my opinion, that did the refinancing, if Wells Fargo turns down, there's a million of other places to go refinance your home. Million. Why are you still with them? Why? And the reason why they didn't want to refinance you because they want to charge your dumbass a higher rate and make more money off of you. And they take it for granted you're not smart to know any better. But here he is, Mr. DeRusso. I don't get it. At the end of the day, 2021, I'm sorry, 2022, why are we loving to leave our money and do money with people that really just don't want to honor us as who we are?
Well, the sad thing about it is that we don't know, and we're told that we're supposed to go through certain procedures to do things. And let's be honest, we're kind of still new to this. They didn't allow us to do a lot of stuff, man. And when you're talking about buying a house and stuff, that's the pathway to wealth and all that other stuff. But we're still new. We're still catching up. And so I think it's really important, like Mr. Charles said, we've got to educate ourselves. We've got to get with the right people. If you don't know, you have to ask. But we're like a little kid in society that, okay, we're going to let you do all this, so go for yours. And, we don't know what to do. We really don't know what to do, but we know we want things and we want, to live the American dream, but we still don't understand the rules of the game. And I think that's to our downfall. But, there are policies that keep us from doing what we need to do based on our skin color, but sometimes we just don't sit down and say, okay, what are the rules to the game and what are the loopholes so I can get what I need to get to live this quote-unquote American dream?
Say this, man. Stop. It's a long time. We got to catch up, bro. I mean, we got to catch up. And
yeah.
We live in a world now where information is so readily easy to come by. You walk around with something in your hand daily, put you in link with so much information, man. It's just amazing. I can speak into my phone and find out what I need to find out. I ain't even got to push a button. Think about that. I could walk into my room and speak to Google, my alarm clock, and ask information. Seriously, bro. I mean, I just don't understand it. I just don't. I don't kind of get it, man. I don't kind of get it. We got 2 minutes to go before we kind of get out of here. I'm gonna throw a name out, and I'm gonna see what you two think. And then we'll roll out of here. I'm gonna say Liz Cabbage.
I got to backtrack. When talked about the feet, I'm like, yeah, that's going to be a problem for me. So I got to backtrack. Great article, though, man. Man, if I was 6'9". Liz, we'd be a business, baby. We'd be a business.
Woo!
But Mr. Man. Johnson, he ain't going to fall in love with no WNBA player no more, so I don't know how he feel.
Yeah. What do you say, Mr. Charles? You got a minute. What you got, boss?
Well, like I said, some people and some things aren't enough for everybody. But you'd have to show me that you on my on the same team, right? We work in the same way. But as far as the feet and everything, I can get over that, bro. Put some socks on, bro. You be all right. Cover them up. Whatever what's going on. We ain't going into a sandal contest. We're going through some other things, so you got to know what you're dealing with. You got the perspective, man.
Yeah.
That's just me. I like challenges.
Y'all be good.
No, I just don't move. Oh, yeah. Watching people break the rules. Or maybe the man in charge and doesn't like my face. Well, then this world's not always good.